Good evening. My name's Alison McCabe. I'm the chair of the local planning panel. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land and pay our respect to their elders past and present. Welcome to the meeting. As I said, I'm the chair, Alison McCabe. I'll just introduce the panel members who we have tonight. So to my immediate left is Steve Lehman. To my immediate right is Helena Miller, and to my far right is Brendan Randalls. Bernard. B starts with V. Bernard. Very much apologise. Now, do I have any apologies other than Brendan? Sorry, no. We have no apologies. Any declarations of interest?
No.
And just for the record, we've all signed our declaration of interest forms prior to the meeting. We have two matters tonight. One is a matter that has been before the panel before for a construction of four multi-dwelling units at 18 Hopetoun Street, Woonoona, and a alterations and additions. The second matter is alterations and additions to a an approved development of alteration addition to an approved dwelling house development at 2C Pass Avenue, Thurule. It's actually a Section 96 4.55 modification application seeking changes to the approved building. Item one, just for the record, is a matter that has previously been considered by the panel and is a matter that the panel is the determining authority on. Item two, which is the Pass Avenue Thurule matter, is a matter that has been reported to the panel for advice only. So in that case, the panel is not the determining authority. The determining authority is actually the council officers, but they have reported the matter because there have been a number of submissions to the panel for us to provide advice. Just before we get started, the panel's responsibilities are to consider the materials presented to us in an unbiased and transparent way and to make decisions in accordance with our responsibilities under the planning framework applicable to development applications. Can I please ask everybody to turn their mobile phones off or turn them to silent? Just so you're all aware, the panel meetings are being recorded and a copy of the recording of the meeting will be up on Council's website, usually within about 3 or 4 days of the meeting. Just be aware that this may involve the recording of some personal information because we often ask people where they are and where they're living. The panel has read the reports, we've understood the plans, we've actually been to the site, so we're across the material. We've also had the opportunity to read the submissions made. When you're addressing the panel, just understand we do have a level of knowledge. When you're addressing the panel or listening to people, I expect everybody to observe common courtesy. We don't want people speaking over each other. Also don't want inappropriate comments or any comments or reflections against people either here or not here. It's important to understand this isn't a debate. This is about the panel understanding the issues so we can make an informed decision. And it's important that all presentations are actually directed to the panel. We're actually interested in the issues and the application under consideration, not the personalities associated with that application. We're going to deal with each matter in turn. And I'm just going to, before I go to the first item, I have a number of people registered to speak and I'm just going to call those people out just to make sure they're here. I've got Craig Moyer. Craig, Tamara Meyer. You're on twice. Are you speaking on behalf of... Okay, and is there a neighbour or...
Yeah, the neighbour.
Okay, that's all right. And Janelle Roby. Janelle, thank you. And then Luke Rollison, and Luke, I can see you, and Bryce Short, the designer, you're both here. Okay. Rightio, so we'll move to the first item, which is the 18 Hopetoun Street Winoona matter. So Craig, if you'd like to come up and make your presentation. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I forgot to say. People have 5 minutes. Just for the applicant and those of you who might have come last time, you haven't got a whole new panel, but we do have two representatives who were actually on the original panel. So there's a level of knowledge of of the application and the reasons why it was deferred.
So, no, that's all right. Yeah. Some of it will be similar, but there's points.
Okay.
Thank you. Good evening, Wollongong Local Planning Panel. Thanks for allowing me to speak to you again in regards to our objections to the revised proposed development of 18 Hopetoun Street. We live at number 20. Our property will be the most affected by this proposed development, as we'll be going from having one single-storey home next to us to having four double-storey properties, two of which approximately 2 metres from our boundary. Units 1 and 2 of the proposal will basically create a 30-metre wall that's 7 metres high, running right along our eastern side, 2 metres from our boundary. In WLPP's determination statement of reason dated the 20th of March, development was to provide breaks in the built form at the first floor to reduce visual mass. Units 1 and 2 don't provide this at all. A 30-metre by 7-metre high wall is simply overwhelming in appearance and will smother our entire property, not just our home. The main point of our argument is site width. As MMJ say, 53%, over half of the block, is too narrow. According to Wollongong Council guidelines, your rules, the site width must be 18 metres minimum. Proposed site's only 15.24 metres wide, almost 16% too narrow. The site width is the same as ours at number 20. The block's designed for a single resident with a backyard that a family would love. It's not designed for a four double-storey apartment complex squeezed into every last nook and cranny. This really should be the end of the discussion. It simply can't go ahead. I'd like to point out our loss of privacy and the impact on our property environmental issues. Firstly, the amount of winter sun. The diagram showing winter sun shows our home won't be clear of shadow from the proposed development until after 10. Our main bedroom and kitchen area only gets morning sun. Now, I've got photos to show you later, taken between June 20th and 30th of this year. The proposal will now prevent any direct sunlight into these rooms. This will result in health hazards such as mildew and mould building up in these rooms. The direct sunlight on our eastern side shines under our house too, which helps prevent termites. Our established lavender plants, lemon tree and clothesline will now be shaded for longer. The 1.8 metre colour bond fence for the proposed development, together with the increased shading, will destroy our much established side garden and much loved over 3 metre tall lemon tree, as well as forcing us to buy and erect a new clothesline. I noticed that there was no mention of our lemon tree in the arborist report, as was required. The fence will also prevent us from getting our rubbish bins onto the street for weekly collection. We can't relocate our bins to our drive due to our driveway being on the other side. The demolition of the present structures and driveway will result in debris, dust, etc. into our property, and more than likely cause damage to the structure of our home due to the physical location. Who covers us on these issues? Loss of privacy will become more evident with the addition of four extra sets of neighbours. We will be able to see into their private open space due to the elevated deck, and they'll be able to see into ours. There will be windows overlooking into our private open space. The revised plan submitted by MMJ still failed to indicate windows and deck on our property. In summertime, the nor'easters cool our home. We rarely need to use our AC. If this development is approved, those nor'easters will be blocked, resulting in increased use of our AC, meaning more power use, greater cost to us. On Wednesday evenings, there will be 8 additional bins out on the street every week, creating more hazards. More cars in the area will result in more pollution. The eastern end of Hopetoun Street is already overdeveloped. There are at least 8 multi-dwelling blocks in the space of a few hundred metres. MMJ has also mentioned this. In the last WLPP meeting, concern of overdevelopment of our street was brought up by the panel. Each of the present multi-dwelling blocks conformed to site width regulations required by council. When one of these multi-dwelling blocks neighbours a single dwelling property, they're separated by a driveway at the minimum. This proposal will totally smother our property. I know for a fact that many people in the neighbouring units use their garages for storage, etc., and leave their cars on the road. I know for a fact that one block of eight units has six cars on the street. MMJ's diagram showing the manoeuvring area for cars along the driveway indicate that it'll be extremely tight. I don't believe the revised manoeuvring area meets the parking requirements mentioned by WLPP in their last meeting dated March 20th. I can tell you now those cars won't be in the garage, they'll be on the road, resulting in more hazards. One visitor parking spot for four multi-bedroom properties is simply unrealistic. I'd like to sum up by saying that this proposal is not in the interest of Hopetoun Street, Winoona. The present residents of Hopetoun Street follow council rules and regulations. My family follow council rules and regulations. We pay our rates, etc. Members of the Wollongong Local Planning Panel, I say this. Proposed site's too narrow. It is the same width as our property. We brought our pace because it had a single dwelling on either side. It had a block designed for a single dwelling on either side. 18 Hopetoun Street is not designed for a multi-dwelling complex, designed for a single dwelling with a nice backyard. Worst case, they could battle-axe the property. Members of the WLPP, you've been to the proposed site. You've seen the physical position of our home and how our home has side access from the eastern side. The proposal just can't work. It'll smother our property, destroy our quality of life, and force us into changes and costs that we don't want. Please don't be persuaded by developers who throw money around, make out how good it'll be for council and future residents. They make a fortune and don't care about the present residents that will be affected. And again, will they be living there? Of course not. Thank you for your time, and I hope you make the right decision for the residents of Hopetoun Street. And I'd like to submit several photos dated between March 20th and 20th showing our lemon tree, our property, location of the property, a typical parking day, and a typical rubbish collection day. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Before you, any questions of Craig? No, we understand where your property is, so we're there today.
Thank you. Do I hand this to you?
Just give those to John and we'll have a look at them. Tamara. So you've got 5 minutes, so you're speaking in respect to your property?
Yes, I will be speaking for myself
first. And then
if you give me another 5 minutes, I'll speak on behalf of the other person. Good evening, my name is Tamara. I thank you for the opportunity to speak. First of all, I would like to point out that plans and documents for the proposed development displayed for public viewing for the two-week period were different from the ones attached to the agenda of this meeting. Public have the right to view the plans that are actually considered to be approved. Letter from WCC still mentioned development of five lots, not four. There were documents attached on the website with specifications of the fifth unit. This is very confusing and alarming. Our street is an R2 low-density area, but somehow it is dominated by multi-dwelling developments of double and three-storey buildings. On the original survey and site analysis plan, the block of units to the west of the proposal is identified incorrectly. It is a three-storey building, not two, which, by the way, should never have been approved in the R2 zone. In the SSE, as well as the survey, there is no mentioning of the double-storey block of units immediately adjacent to the east of the proposed development. Such obvious mistakes are unacceptable and mislead about street potential, infrastructure, and already overdevelopment. In WDCP, it states, in R2 zones where development occurs with an 8-metre rear setback, the development is limited to single-storey. Proposed units 3 and 4 are only 7 metres off the rear boundary and therefore are not allowed to be double-storey. The FSR calculated on site analysis plan is incorrect. The floor area measurements displayed on are wrong and do not match the numbers on proposed strata subdivision plan nor BASIC certificate. which makes it impossible to calculate the true gross floor area and FSR. Total area of Unit 2 on proposed strata subdivision plan does not add up either. On page 17 of SEC, developer mentions existing sewer line running west to east, midway through the property. No diagram of its location has been provided. Has the developer obtained approval from the authorities to build over the sewer line? If so, no documentation has been provided for public viewing showing slab thickness and reinforcement. The dimensions and connection details for the underground tank have not been provided. We believe placing of the underground tank for Unit 2, as well as installing a new stormwater line, will be obstructed by the existing sewer line. We have concerns of potential illegal cross-connections of stormwater drain discharging into the sewer. It is not clearly demonstrated that the required 30% of the site is landscaped. The landscaped concept plan displayed for public viewing on the council website before July 3rd indicated that the landscaped area was 374 square metres, which is only 29%. The figure has been changed to 443 on the plans attached to today's agenda, but it is hard to believe that gaining of 69 square metres of landscaping could have been achieved by doing only minor changes. The proposal contains a number of garden beds less than 1.5 metres in width, which should not be included within the landscaped area calculations, according to WDCP. In the pre-lodgement notes, Council requested for shadow diagrams with consideration of any shadow cast by adjoining developments. Had it been done, we would have seen that POS of Unit 1 is almost completely shaded between 9 and 3 on June 21st, which does not meet solar access requirements of 50% of the private open space area for each of the subject dwellings to receive at least 3 hours of sunlight between 9 and 3 on June 21st. The same issue has been raised at previous panel meeting, and the panel's request for the plans to be amended to meet council requirements has been ignored by the developer. Although the units have been split into two buildings to reduce the visual mass, proposed units 1 and 2 are still of overwhelming nature. Walls measure 30 metres long by over 7 high to run along our entire block, which will have a negative impact on our visual amenity. Please refer to WDCP Chapter B1, Clause 411E. Manoeuvring plan does not meet the requirements of vehicles entering and leaving the site in a forward direction, making no more than a single point turn. The issue also has been raised at the previous WPP meeting. If the car is parked at the visitor's parking spot in the middle of outlined space, then the car from the garage of Unit 4 won't be able to get out, nor would the visitor's car. If the visitor's car is parked as shown on the plan right next to the fence, then you won't be able to open the passenger's door. Also, manoeuvring area of Unit 2 is immediately adjacent to the living area, which is not permitted. Recycling and waste collection services require half a metre space between waste bins placed for collection. It will require a space of 8.3 metres to accommodate 8 bins, which exceeds 50% of street frontage permitted by the council. I'm enclosing a diagram. In conclusion, the proposal does not comply with a minimum site width, rear setback and solar access requirements. Calculation of landscaped area is questionable. Plans contain multiple errors and misleading information. The proposal will increase density of already overdeveloped streets and will not benefit current residents nor the future ones. I'm enclosing photographs with comments and a diagram of bins collection. I am resubmitting a petition signed by 73 residents of Hopeton Street. Thank you.
Okay, so that was on behalf of your property. Can
yes.
you just I just noted that when was the first time that you've seen the plans that are attached to the agenda?
Yesterday.
So what did you get in the mail? A piece of paper saying that these were re-advertised or...?
No, we got the letter, original notification letter, saying that the documents are there for public viewing before the 3rd of July, which we did. I had a printout of all of them. And then last night I went on the website to have a look what's attached, and they were different.
Okay. I might just council officers. These plans got re-advertised, didn't they?
I believe so.
As you understand? We might get a copy of the letter that...
It would be a letter and a link to the council's website.
Yes, there was a link. there was a link and it said that the documents will be allowed a week before the this meeting, which I had a look last night at. Yes, that is correct.
Normally, did a set of normally a site plan. Does council send a site plan out with their notification letters? It's just a letter with a link. Okay. We might just have a look at that letter. So, but your what you understand is the first time
I
you've
can
seen
show you both printed versions. What was advertised for the 2 weeks before the 3rd of July, and what was on the website a week before this panel meeting.
Yeah, I'd understand what... I'm actually interested in when you... what plans you actually got to see and when you saw them. That's OK.
Well, can
you
just clarify?
Yeah.
Jacob indicated that there was a couple of ships that were being updated in between the notification.
That's the site plan and the landscape plan, which just involved...
Yeah, no, that's yeah. They're not the fundamentals. It's the change from 4 to 5, which would have been the reason. Sorry, from 5 to 4.
Yeah, that was a mistake in the council letter of notification.
Right. So on the when it was first when the letter went out.
Yeah.
On that, the description of the project was had an error.
Yep.
With it, but the plans indicated for 4 units, but the description was wrong.
Yeah, but what I'm hearing, there's no plans that went out with that letter. It was the letter identified a link to the website, and you would have had to go on the website to find the plans that had 4 units in them.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
They were documents attached with the specifications of the 5th unit in that 2-week time period.
So what you're saying to us is that you got a letter telling you that there was a 2-week advertising
yep.
notice saying that there was an opportunity to make further submissions and that the plans attached to that letter showed 5 units. Is that what you're saying?
The plans did not show 5 units. There was basics, I can't remember whether it was certificate or something else, mentioning 5 units and all the specs.
Did you have any plans attached to that letter?
On the website,
it's on the
that
website.
Was on the website.
So
yeah.
So
you did see the 4 units.
I did see the 4 units, and there was mentioning of the 5th unit.
That's all right. You just when I asked you when the first time that you saw these plans, you said essentially when the agenda last night or when the agenda came out or when you got a look at the agenda, but. You did see on the website when the notification letter went out, even though there's a lot on that website, and there would have been the original plans that had 5, and then there would be basic certificates that had 5.
Yes.
You did get to see a set of plans that had 4.
Yes.
That's
yes,
all right. That's
yes.
what I wanted to make sure,
yes.
that you've had the opportunity to see those plans. All right, that's clear now. Do you have any questions before
I just wanted to ask, so the petition that you're handing up is... It was done on the original application?
Yes.
Not on this.
For
the amended version.
Okay,
thank you.
Now, have we got any other questions of Tamara before she moves on to her representations on behalf of another neighbour, is it?
Yes, another neighbour to the east of the proposal development.
Immediately next door or further away? What's the property address that you're...
The property address is 4/14-16 Hopeton Street. This is the
next
development.
Yeah. Immediately
yeah,
next door.
Yeah.
That's good. I understand.
All right. Can I start?
Yes, please.
Yep. Dear members of the panel, we discovered a number of issues with the proposed landscape and floor plans. Private open space areas have to be separated from boundaries by at least 1.5 metres with a vegetated landscaping bed. Courtyard of Unit 2 does not meet that requirement, having a garden bed of insufficient size at the north boundary. garden bed adjacent to the POS of Unit 1 appears to be shaded for almost entire time from 9 to 3. No vegetation would survive without getting sunlight. Unit 1 clothesline is located side by side with the rubbish bins and at a height of just over a metre in front of a kitchen window and overhanging the garden bed, highly impractical and somewhat absurd. Clothesline of Unit 2 is overhanging the garden bed as well. In the amended for tonight's meeting's plans, the rubbish bins of Unit 1 partially placed in the garden. Proposed turf area for Units 1 and 2 along western side is of unworthy size. Available space would not allow for the mower to get through. Grass won't be growing under the rubbish bins. Proposed placement of rubbish bins for Unit 2 is aesthetically unappealing, considering they will be visible from both the private open space and dining area. Rainwater tank requires to be placed on a hard surface, not turf, as it is proposed for Units 3 and 4. No air conditioning is proposed for any of the units, a desirable and useful amenity, especially in this humid climate. If the developer is proceeding with installation of air conditioning, the position of the AC units should be clearly marked on the plans. Units 1 and 2 living area is about 12.5 square metres, not enough for potentially 6 people to reside. Furniture arrangements are not shown on the plan because, due to walkways, there is no practical way of putting any furniture to resemble a comfortable living. Units 3, 4 living area is not much larger, only about 13.5 square metres. The usable area of the so-called rumpus room upstairs is only about 6 square metres. It lacks ventilation and has no natural lighting. It is a hallway which cannot serve the purpose of a rumpus room for potentially 8 people, where, once again, no furniture could be placed. There is no dimension of the garage length shown for Units 1 and 2. Upper floor plan for Units 1 and 2 does not provide window schedule for windows 12 and 13. Lower floor plan for Units 1 and 2 contains a mistake in window 2 measurements in the window schedule. There seems to be a confusion in identifying which windows are clear and which ones are frosted on the plans for all 4 units. Proposed street planting of a mature tree would be constrained by an electricity pole on the nature street. There are no doors or even openings proposed to the ensuite and walk-in wardrobe in Units 3 and 4. Due to the poor design, it is either impossible or highly impractical to provide doors. Taking into consideration that the existing dwelling was built before 1980, it is reasonable to suspect that it contains asbestos. According to the WCC Asbestos Policy Clause 961, the issue should have been raised and discussed at the pre-DA meeting. Such discussion has not been documented in the pre-lodgement notes dated 16th of April 2018. We believe the assessment has to be conducted prior to demolition, and if asbestos is detected, its removal should be included in the site demolition and waste management plan for properties to be demolished both on 18 Hopton Street and 93 Farrell Road. Concept drainage plan is not integrated with the landscape plan. Position of the OSD grate is proposed to be in a heavily mulched garden. This will allow mulch and other debris flush into the pit and potentially block stormwater line. There are concerns that fire brigade services would not be able to access all units. The proposed driveway is over 50 metres long, and the provision is not made so that Fire and Rescue New South Wales vehicles can enter and leave the site in a forward direction. The location of a fire hydrant is not marked on any of the plans. The street is not capable of accommodating for additional 8 rubbish bins for weekly collection. Waffle pod slab is proposed for the development, which is not suitable for sloped sites. There is a 6-metre drop over the length of the block. Having turfed area and garden beds against the house on a waffle pod slab allows rainwater to drain down under the house. This will lead to slab heave and cracking of the walls, so many cases we've heard about reported by the media in recent years. The proposed development will increase traffic, pollution and parking demands on the already busy street. There is a number of families on the street with young children, including ourselves, who are concerned about their kids' safety. Walking along the street has become quite dangerous. Too many vehicles turning in and out of driveways of countless multi-dwelling development sites. Drivers' views are obstructed by the parked vehicles along both sides of the street, and a number of accidents have occurred because of that. Approving an uncompliant development on a block that is too narrow will increase the chances of traffic accidents. Thank you for hearing out our concerns. Chulpan by Guzan.
Thank you. Now, do we have any questions in relation to that submission and the property next door? Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Tamara. That was good.
Thank you.
Janelle Roby.
Good evening and thank you to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel for hearing our concerns. My husband, my three children and I live at number 21 Hopedon Street. So we're...
Across the road?
Across the road,
yep.
Yep.
Directly across the road or just a little bit on the end?
We'd be two down.
Yep.
Yep, so we're in between two existing...
Blocks of
the
flats.
Yep.
Multi-unit.
Our objections to the proposed development are related to excessive traffic volume, safety, and overutilization and overdevelopment of a narrow and highly populated street, being Hopedon Street. It has been identified in the application that the existence of a number of multi-dwelling houses on Hopedon Street is essentially precedence for approval of this application. However, it is our belief that additional multi-dwelling houses will in fact exceed the street's current safety and functional capacity. Hopedon Street is a narrow cul-de-sac road which also services a large, high-volume medical centre and associated allied health services, as well as a popular 24-hour gym which has no on-site parking. Additionally, the street has side streets to another cul-de-sac and a busy narrow laneway to a large unit complex. In addition to the community accessing the facilities at the entrance to the street, Hopedon Street is home to many young families with young children playing, riding, walking and travelling to school. With the number of and the way cars are parked in the street, driveways and visibility is obscured, which in addition to volume of passing traffic and the speed at which cars travel up the road, safety is a growing concern. Currently to navigate the street, it is essentially one way, with frequent near misses and several documented incidences. There is little to no on-street parking currently between overflow vehicles from the heavily developed multi-dwelling houses already on the street and people accessing the facilities on our street. At night, cars are often parked on footpaths and in the cul-de-sac to accommodate the volume. The multi-dwelling complex opposite the proposed site, for example, often has in excess of 8 additional vehicles alone parked on the street. The parking arrangement for the proposal is noted. However, with limited storage space in the proposed dwellings, the double garages are unlikely to be used, as is the case with many of the multi-dwelling complexes on the street currently, and with limited manoeuvrability within the proposed development's driveway due to the block width, overflow is anticipated onto the already overcrowded street. It is noted in the preliminary report that these issues are broader than the scope of this development application. However, continuing to add development, vehicles and population to an already overpopulated and over-accessed street is counterintuitive, and would appear that additional rates are more important than ensuring functional and safe infrastructure for existing ratepayers and the community. The WLEP Clause 7.14 relating to the minimum site width for proposed developments exists to ensure that land is not overdeveloped beyond its capacity, which, in the context of Hopedon Street, will be the result. Furthermore, it is noted in Chapter D1 character statements that the desired future character of Winuna should remain a relative low-density residential suburb, which Hopedon Street currently contradicts and will continue to contradict if such proposals as this continue to be approved. Additionally, the current character of the streetscape is heritage, and the proposed development strays from this style in both appearance and scale. We urge you to consider the appropriateness of continuing to develop an overcrowded street in an area that should remain low density and that lacks the design to accommodate its current, let alone proposed, usage. Development should benefit a community, and further development of Hopedon Street would be a disservice to current rate-paying residents and the community accessing the facilities in the street. Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much, Janelle. Does anybody have any questions? Thank you very much. Luke and Bryce, do you want to come up together or are you coming up separately?
Yep.
Yep.
thanks for hearing us tonight. I might just start by answering a couple of the queries or concerns raised by the residences, and if you guys have any queries after that, we can try and answer them.
Yes, we do.
In regards to Mr. Moore's comments, and I apologise if I miss things. Some of the speakers were fairly fast going through those items, but yeah, in regards to the visual break comments provided, you know, the panel in our last meeting had a greater emphasis on, you know, the Balkan scale of 5 units across the site was an overdevelopment, you know, in re-looking at this proposal, it was clear there was a good opportunity to provide a notable break between 2 building forms rather than a consistent building form across an elongated site. So the idea was to stagger that building form with a cluster of 2 at the front and a cluster of 2 at the rear, and provide that visual break between. In terms of the upper levels, they're all articulated facades, and Bryce can talk about that further if necessary. We've gone from 4 units to 5 units to 4 units. Ultimately will, I guess, assist with a lot of the parking considerations that were there previously. The same amount of visitors parking is required for 5 dwellings as it is for 4. We still have 1 visitor parking space. All dwellings now have double garages, and units 1 and 2 are oversized in those garages as well to provide excess storage opportunities. In regards to the solar access considerations on the adjoining Western 20 Hopetoun, the requirements have been achieved for the solar access to the POS areas, as in the rear backyard areas, as are required to do. The solar access in relation to the proposed development and unit obligations are to achieve 75% in terms of your solar access during midwinter for those, and we achieve 3 of the 4 75% requirement, or 70% is actually the requirement. In regards to the bins, again, council's policy requires that the amount of bins to be collected from a street frontage must not exceed 50% of the width of that street frontage, and the 8 bins that will be located there won't exceed that requirement, and there's ample frontage available to service those bins. In regards to Mrs. Moore's first presentation, I can't comment on the notification period, other than to say and reiterate the planner's comments that as a result of some inconsistencies between the site plan and the landscape plan with regards to boundary treatment of landscaping and locations of rainwater tanks and certain calculations, those 2 plans post-exhibition were updated for the panel's report tonight, and were included. Obviously, what you see before you are the updated ones, which were included in the report, being online for the last week. So, it was primarily to do with the edge treatment associated with units 1 and 2. Previously, there was a path there, but we've turfed all that and provided a consistent 1.5 landscape strip along that complete edge. And as per the panel's requirements previously, there's complete compliance with the landscape areas, achieving the minimum 30% and achieving a 1.5 metre perimeter around the site there. In regards to the suggested single storey requirement for within 8 metres of the rear dwelling, that doesn't apply to multi-dwelling developments. That only applies to duplexes and dwelling houses. In regards to the sewer, there is a sewer that runs through the middle of the site. There's a requirement in the conditions that Sydney Water compliance must be achieved and applications to be lodged, which following development consent, that will be undertaken to move through that appropriate process to see if there are any conflicts between stormwater design and or encasing requirements that may need to occur there. Again, the landscaped area that I've talked about that and the POS areas for Unit 1, yes, it doesn't achieve the 3 hours, but three of the four units do as we're required to do. In terms of the manoeuvring diagrams are shown. They've been referred to Council's traffic engineer, who has deemed them satisfactory. In regards to the second submission for Mrs. Moyer, the setback for Unit 1, Unit 2 POS is 1.5 metres off the side boundary in that regard. There's no requirement for us to have internal setbacks to fences or landscape treatments. Unit 1, again, doesn't achieve the solar access requirements, as we acknowledge, but the other three units do. For AC air conditioning requirements, that'll be a matter for future landowners to consider in that regard. But if there are concerns as to the suggested locations of those, then we would accept any conditions recommending locations for any future air conditioning units if that's being proposed. In regards to the window schedule, I'll have Bryce just talk about that. I'm not sure of the errors there. Usually we'd only provide a window schedule at CC stage anyway, but if there is an error, we would acknowledge it. Units 3 and 4, walk-in robe, yep, we agree that there's a clear error there that doesn't show the actual entry point behind the doors into there as to getting into the walk-in robe. So that's an error that can be erected in CC stage. But if the panel wants more clarity up front, then we can submit resubmitted plans post this meeting as well. Asbestos concerns, there are I think it's condition 40. There's requirements for any handling of asbestos during demolition stage and how that is supposed to be managed throughout the demolition and construction phase to ensure that there's no risk to workers or adjoining residences or future landowners or occupants. Again, the comments were made in relation to the bins and the concerns on the street. In regards to the suggested concerns with slab treatment, that'll be a matter for structural engineers at CC stage, I understand. With regards to Ms. Roby's comments from across the road, in terms of traffic volumes, we again meet those parking requirements. All units will have double garages. The visitor parking is in excess, you know, 0.8 is what we need. We have one to accommodate that reduced dwelling yield from 5 to 4 that we do have at the moment and are proposing. In terms of safety, you know, we are proposing, as is generally required for these type of developments, a two-way threshold as you come into the site, which will allow appropriately vehicles to enter and exit at the same time without conflict and enable good lines of sight as you come into in and out of the driveway as well. And the storage concerns, again, my understanding is we meet storage plans being provided. We meet the minimum, if not better than the minimum requirements for storage. The garages, again, of Unit 1 and 2, I think, are 6.4 metres wide from memory, instead of 6 metres wide to create some additional opportunities there if it's needed. So I think that's a bit of a summary on the main issues that I could get pen down that were raised. I'm not sure if you have any further comments, Bryce.
The only couple of items that I would
move across so you can get picked up.
There we go. The only couple of extra items that I would raise that that Luke hasn't touched on is the design of particularly units 1 and 2 coming away from the last meeting. We were looking to ensure that we maintain that privacy and also maintain some articulation. If you look at the long section from the western or the western elevation, you can see the building has multiple articulations, both at lower and upper level, but also it articulates or continues to reduce its level as it runs down the site, so we've been sympathetic to the existing slope of the site. We've also only included upper-level highlight windows to that western elevation to maintain privacy, so that was a deliberate decision made coming out of the last meeting. One of the other things that was touched on that Luke's not mentioned is the difference between the floor area for the planning floor area versus BASICs versus the strata plans. Each of those numbers are different because they're calculated differently, so I just wanted to make sure that that's understood. I think everything else was touched on there. Thanks.
Okay, we've got a few questions. Just, anybody want to start in particular?
With the jacaranda tree?
Jacaranda, we'll start with the jacaranda tree. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys reckon the jacaranda tree is?
In the northwest corner of the site.
So are you keeping it or not?
Yep.
So we went out, we're out there. So when you look at your survey, so just to cut through, we pace out the jacaranda tree, mm-hmm. and it's like we pace out between 8 and 9 metres from the rear boundary and about between 1.5 and 2 metres in from the boundary. So at the moment, looking on, I think the landscape plan's the only plan that actually has the tree on it. We've got that jacaranda being the one shown to be removed.
Okay. I thought it was tree number 3.
Yeah, I think they've got it wrong.
Okay.
So, and from our point of view, we're expecting the jacaranda to be kept.
Okay.
Which, on the basis of the layout of...
I don't have the arborist report on me, sorry, but...
We've got it. Can council just...
And do they show... Does the arborist...
It's wrong.
Okay.
I think we've got to the... We might just get council officers to explain. I might just get the council officers to explain what they think's happened with the arborist report. Irrespective, we didn't even look at the arborist report out on site. We just kind of looked at the survey, paced out, and thought there's something not right.
Yep.
You can just explain what you think's gone on.
Three's been said to be the jacaranda tree, but B is in fact the jacaranda tree. Like it's been paced out, and it was a mistake when it was transferred from this to the landscape plan. And so when you've designed around that removal and that retention, we've inadvertently, so it's gone.
So B is an exempt species, but that's not the jacaranda.
It's not.
That's the actual jacaranda.
Okay. And you council want to keep that jacaranda, even though it's exempt.
So there's the frangipani tree here that's exempt. Then there's another tree here.
Oh, really? They've actually missed it.
This three should have been B. Should have been 3.
Okay.
And 3 shouldn't be on the plan.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So that's...
We're quite certain of that.
Yep.
As certain as we can be that it's an error.
Yep. Okay. All right.
So of all the... There's not very many trees on site. And I think all the way through we've expected the jacaranda to be...
Myself, or you?
Yeah. So your application's that. So... So there's one, I won't put you on the spot as to how you think, you do have the designer here, how you think that might be able to be achieved at the moment. I think we all think that that's not capable of being done in the current layouts. Probably while we're here, we had some questions about the presentation of the building to the street and, and some design issues, so we might just open up some questions on that.
So just in terms of the Unit 1 and its presentation to the street, just concerned about the upper level, more broadly also concerned about the colour scheme and the materials and the materiality. There is some, obviously some articulation in the alignment of the building, but it's
pretty stark.
Yeah, it's pretty trying to be polite.
Yeah.
It's pretty stark. And also then, most importantly, on the streetscape, there's a highlight window on the upper level of the building presenting to the street, which is not a good streetscape presentation. So is there any reason why that couldn't be a more conventional-style window on the fronting the street?
No,
because it
no,
has, really. Has a pretty poor presentation. The way
we can, yeah, we can make it quite big. The only issue is being facing south. There's a consequence to the basics, thermal efficiencies, but we can make alterations elsewhere.
Two other minor drafting errors that ought to be addressed if you're going to rework the plans. You know, the just the simple thing of doors to the en suites in bedroom one of units 3 and 4. We've acknowledged that there's no door to the walk-in wardrobes, neither are the doors to the en suites. The other matter that you might like to give some thought to is whether the units 3 and 4 ground floor laundries are a good, the positioning of those and the WCs are a good use of the north aspect, the great north aspect that you've got there, and whether there's not a better way of arranging those such that in fact all of the north aspect is enjoyed by the living areas and dining areas of units 3 and 4.
I'll let Bryce talk about the design considerations, but
ultimately
what we're hearing, this needs to be designed anyway in those locations.
That's
so
what we're thinking. There needs to be some redesign.
We can take that point on board for
trying
sure.
Trying to help while we're at it.
I guess from our perspective, there's a conscious effort not to, because we are elevated compared to the Farrell Road properties, there's a conscious effort not to overlook those properties where we can as well. If you notice all the upper level windows, they've been oriented east and west instead of north, again sacrificing some solar access and natural light considerations. But you know, at the last meeting there was an objector who didn't speak tonight, but who was concerned about the overlooking and young kids and their pool and stuff like that. So we've gone away from that. I guess in terms of convenience, the laundry is located at the location to simply come out and walk down the side and hang your washing out. But certainly if optimising solar access to the living areas is something that the panel would like us to look at, then in redesigning considerations associated with jacaranda,
so
we'd have to look at it.
You don't just simply come out from the laundry. You've got to come out from the laundry through the study area and across the dining area and out through the living room doors. So it's really not a simple relationship between the laundry and the yard.
Yeah,
just an observation.
Are at the side, so they're actually further away from where you've put the The other thing was the amenity of the amenity of the upper level rumpus rooms, which don't have any windows in them. So, I mean, I think the panel did say last time they were concerned about the amenity of the internal amenity of the units, and that appreciate that that has been increased in size by the reduction of the units. However, that space is not going to have very high level amenity with no light or windows in it.
We could have checked with the skylight.
Yeah, so that's maybe something you should be thinking about.
Yeah.
probably just a broader. It's quite interesting. You're chasing three-bedroom and four-bedroom units, but there's a real disproportion in relation to sleeping spaces versus living spaces, in terms of the size, which, you know, it's not fatal, but it just seems for the four-bedroom unit, the living space is, you know, basically the size of something, probably about the size of my two-bedroom unit, which just seems to quite a disproportion.
Yep.
So I'm not saying that that's, you know, start creeping out into boundaries and open space, because I think you're just dead on open space, and it's very important that the open space stays as it is, and that's why we want, I think it's important that jacaranda tree stay as well.
Yep. Yep.
I guess the only other thing I would add is on the extent of the building wall and unit one and two adjacent to the boundary to the west or to the neighbouring property. So, I mean, you do have some articulation where bedroom three step in, but that stepping in is very... I haven't got a dimension of that, because the road is dimensioned at 5'10", but I think that little sort of articulation element is even less than that, so I'm just not sure how you're going to read that, and it sort of goes to my previous comment about materiality and maybe using the materiality to accentuate
express
the
those.
Articulation, mm-hmm. whether or not that could be more articulated so that the building steps away from that boundary a bit more at the upper level. I mean, the last panel we talked about breaking up the buildings, and I appreciate what you've done in now having two buildings, but I think we're also potentially talking about a break in the upper level. So where you might not be able to achieve that, articulation might be able to give you that visual
that
relief
break, yeah.
stepping away from the neighbouring property.
Yeah.
Could also look at, just on that, because essentially that building essentially takes the whole side boundary of the adjoining residence. And the adjoining residence doesn't have the same ability to, you know, it's not the same size site in terms of allowing for a whole heap of multi-unit. So, again, it's that squeezing the three bedders. Those units one and two have got even smaller living spaces. You know, I'm just going to throw it out there. Maybe you should be looking at two bedrooms and a study upstairs, or maybe you're looking at, you know, if you even looked at smaller bedrooms... that you might be able to achieve a break, that actually a proper break for that expanse of building along the boundary of that property. The setbacks from number, I'll get the number 16, say, the type of development and the way the number 16's development orientates itself means that this development doesn't have that bigger impact on 16, but in terms of the house at number 20, while I don't agree about the shadow impacts, when we've interrogated the shadow diagrams and that there is a variation in scale, it is still a building mass all along their only boundary, and I think there is probably scope for that to be kind of rethought.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments? You can see from our questioning there's some issues.
Yep.
Jacaranda's non-negotiable.
Yep. No,
so I think it's... and
there
I said...
There was never an intent to move.
No.
Unfortunately, it's an error that we need to rectify.
So. Yeah, and so probably in doing that, take the opportunity to... have a think about your layouts, where you put your utility rooms. You said it doesn't make a lot of sense for your laundries to be on your best aspect, and looking at ways to provide further breakup of that building, particularly along that west, you've got the right elevation, the western boundary. The panel understands it's an area that does allow for multi-unit housing, and you are actually asking for a variation, so it's important that we actually can be satisfied that all of those things are...
We understand the added scrutiny for something like this in this situation, and I guess the previous proposal, whilst relatively compliant with a lot of the boundary interface considerations from a numerical point of view, the amenity concerns were the primary things to come out of the last one, so hence the breakup here, and we take all your comments on board.
All right, okay, thank you. Thank you for the presentations. We're going to move on to item two. So for those who have been in the audience waiting for 18 Hopetoun, our comments and decision on that matter will turn up on the website in the same way they did last time.
You'll get to see all of the photos.
We'll see those, yes.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. We're done. So we've heard everything, so we're going to be looking at the information that we've got, and we'll understand from there.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentations. Now, moving on to item two, which is 2C Pass Avenue Thirroul, which is a application for modification to an approved alterations and additions to a dwelling house. I have registered Tom Ellicott, who is from Access Law Group, and Madeline Bowe from PDC Lawyers and Planners. Just for the record, Access Law Group have been unable to attend tonight, and because of some unforeseen circumstances. And we've actually had a written request for this matter to be deferred, as the owners are all overseas. The panel has had the opportunity to read that letter, but we've also had the opportunity to go to the site and read all the correspondence in relation to that has been put before council from the adjoining owners, so we have a full appreciation of that, and I think their position is being made quite clear in their written correspondence. So with that, I think we will deal with this matter tonight, though noting that the panel is not the consent authority. We're only the authority providing advice. So with that, Madeline, do you want to come up and speak? Okay.
Good evening, panel. My name is Madeline Bowe. I am a team member of PDC Planners, the applicant, and here is a representative for the owners of the subject property. Given that the panel has had the benefit of the information in the modification application, the amended plans, as well as Council's report, which I note was annexed to the agenda for tonight, noting a recommendation of approval. I guess I wanted to just briefly touch on the key point, which is the ridge height and the small portion of the ridge height, particularly 1.47 metres of the ridge height that exceeds the 9-metre height plane, to highlight that impacts on key concerns raised by the objectors, namely solar access, privacy, amenity, and view sharing, are insignificant. In fact, by the evidence of the photo montage and the shadow diagrams provided in the modification application, there is little to no impact at all. And I want to invite the panel to ask any questions. Otherwise, I would consider that Council's report was incredibly thorough. And I don't know what else we could add to that tonight, unless you have some questions for us.
Okay, I'll probably just on one thing. In terms of you focused on the non-compliance with the height standard, what do you say, because it's actually a comparison against what was actually approved.
Sure.
So it's not just about, you appreciate, it's not just about where it may not comply with the height standard as a result of these works.
Yes.
It's actually the difference between what was being seen from the property next door and how that has changed, and whether or not that change is resulting. So have you got a comment about the broader
And the key things, I think, from our point of view, were the changes in the ridge lines, the extension of the roof now over the veranda that wasn't there, and whether or not those front veranda, and whether or not those changes have a particular impact on the adjoining property.
Sure, okay. Well, the height, I believe, was approved at 8.99, mm-hmm. Which was only a difference of 0.41 metres as to what is there now. In terms of a change regarding the height of the ridge, the roof being brought forward, I consider that, and I hope that evidence is clear in our modification application, that there is no impact. The photo montage showed that the impact of the roof and the roof being brought forward is of none on the view sharing or of amenity or privacy on that closest neighbour, which is on that western side or the northwestern side. I invite further questions, but there was no evidence of impact on either privacy, solar access or amenity or view sharing.
I'd just like to say that I think that we're stood on the veranda of the neighbouring property. There will be some impact. It will result in some loss of view. It's not a major loss, but it is a difference to what was approved. So I think to say that there is no impact is actually incorrect. You can see in the photos that are in the council's report that the roof is higher, the roof line's higher, and the roof's come forward a bit more. So actually, when you stand on that veranda, you can see that it does take a bit more of the view than it would have if it had been built at the as was approved. So I think that's actually incorrect. But the other thing that I was interested in, I think in your report you talked about the height exceedance being the result of a number of changes in the garage level being 400 millimetres higher and the ridge height being different. But when we look at the plans, the garage level seems to be the same. Is that actually incorrect or is that the case? The floor level of the garage on the approved plans and on the modification plans is the same. I guess my point is I just want to make sure that we're not talking about another change later if that is actually the case that it is higher. But we're actually certain that we're now talking about 9.38, not anything 400 millimetres even higher than that.
Sure, sure. We are talking about, I believe it's 9.4, or do you mean 48.38 RL? Not a worry. So that is the correct height. I believe that it was raised. So due to the topography, the floor was raised, which has caused the...
So does that mean the plans that we have in front of us are not right then? Because the garage level in the plans that we have shows a garage... RL of
38.74. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which mask, which one are you looking at?
Maybe.
Sheet 4 of 10.
Sheet 4
of 10 of the section 4.55 application.
Yep, I have that here.
That's the 7.
So, okay, so that says the garage level is at 38.74.
I've got 38.7.
That was the design.
That was what was approved at. I'm just trying to understand what this 400 mm.
Where did it come from?
Talking about where that's come from.
Oh, okay.
So your report talks about the garage level being built 400 above what was approved.
That's 40 mm, not 400.
I apologise. I do not have.
Maybe it was 40, not 400.
Commentary on that. Panel, I apologise. I've just had my colleague confer. I think we made an error there. It's entirely due to the roof pitch that the roof has resulted in an increase.
Right.
Sorry, that was an error by one of our planners. Apologies.
So it's not about the garage floor level.
No.
It's actually the change in pitch of the roof.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's where it all...
The roof was constructed.
Who are you?
Sorry.
Apologies.
No, you can, like, if
Lee Carmichael's
I'm
one of my colleagues.
From
PDC
Planners.
All right, okay, so...
I'm very sorry. Yeah,
no, drag a chair up and make sure you speak into the mic.
Record, so we need to know who you are.
Sorry, I'm just here to support Madeline and...
that's
just,
okay, so...
Just discussing the query you'd raised with the owner of the land who's in the gallery tonight, and he assures me that, no, that the garage slab floor levels remained as per the original approved plans. It's just simply that the roof was constructed.
It's 40 millimetres. It's a construction tolerance.
Yeah, construction tolerance.
Yes.
The roof was actually constructed on site. Roof trusses weren't delivered to the property ready-made, and it was just the way in which the builder interpreted the plans. And the roof pitch was, that's what's resulted in the error.
All right, any other questions, Stephen?
But that would have become obvious because it showed the original section of the roof. It was coming off the ridge line of the original section of the roof at the rear, coming on and then stepping up to the new addition. So, but in fact, from what we saw today, from the original section of the roof, that was raised up and extended along.
No, I think I understand what you're talking about.
It's like an easy error to make.
Yeah.
Look.
It was clearly approved to extend along, and then it's gone up and then no more.
I'm not really able to explain exactly what was going through the builder's mind when this occurred. We were obviously engaged and consulted to help remedy this unfortunate blunder.
When did it come to light?
When the private certifier was preparing for occupation certificate in March last year.
So the other changes, like the extension of the roof to the front gable over the full extent of the front back, was that made in the same way, or was that an alteration that was decided?
In the bag.
Because originally the front veranda wasn't fully covered.
Yes.
I know there's been changes there, the wraparound veranda part of that's been deleted, the return part has been deleted.
Just these decisions or blunders were made throughout the construction process. I'm not comfortable in answering those questions tonight because I haven't had a detailed discussion with the client exactly how it was we've ended up in this position. However, we have been engaged to prepare a planning application to council and we were requested to assess that planning application on its merits and put a submission to council, and we believe that despite the unfortunate things that have occurred that's led us to this point, we believe that the structure is supportable. So.
You can understand that, like, from the general public's point of view, they get a bit cynical that there's been a modification done, and then they come in the back door and say, well, we want to get this approved even though it's done.
Yes, of course. That's a position that no one wants to be in, and I guess from our client's point of view, if he could rectify this, he could. But I think we're fortunate in these set of circumstances that, despite the errors made, I don't believe there are any impacts on the built environment or the natural environment that are unsupportable. So.
I hear what you say on that matter, although there is some internal inconsistency in the drawings that I'm looking at. Drawing 8 of 10, northwest elevation shows that this proposal, proposed modification, complies with the 9-metre height limit. There's a line there, LEP/WCC-DCP 9-metre ridge height. So clearly that's inconsistent with the other information that suggests that there's a 0.41 variation to the ridge height. So we'd like some clarity on what it is.
Sure. Well, noting that your role tonight is to assist the council with making a determination on this application.
Yeah.
We will commit to revisit these plans and clarify or fix up that error that's shown on the drawing 8 of 10.
I think consistency within the drawings is important in any situation, but particularly this situation.
Yeah.
When you're looking at that, and maybe I'm reading these incorrectly, I'm just looking at section B.
Which plan sheet is that?
Section... I was looking
of 10?
At section A. Section A and section B. And you can tell me if I've got this completely wrong. So when I look at section A, it's your last two sheets.
I didn't get 9 either.
I've got 10, but not 9.
Yeah, I apologise. The architect's numbering wasn't quite there.
So it's just section B?
9 or 10.
You have got 9.
I've got 9 of... I don't know who... Council must have given me these.
That's okay, so we're looking at section B now.
Yeah, section B and section A, and I could be... I might be misreading these, but your application is... the roof is actually... not running off the ridge of the existing house anymore. It's actually higher than it. So if I go, I've got those two sections which... And then if I go to the elevation, so if I go to the northwest elevation, that shows me where that change is. Because I understood you were changing... You weren't running off the top of the... top of the ridge, you've now increased the...
Yeah.
So there's something odd happening there too, I think, unless I've got that completely wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's right. 9 and 10 are wrong. Plan.
Are you able just to explain that one more time to me? I'm sorry.
So if you look at your northwest elevation...
Yes.
So that's your existing house. So your change is...
Yep.
you're no longer, your approved plan was at exactly the same height as the existing ridge.
Yes.
It's now pitching up a bit and it's higher, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So then you go to your sections.
Section B.
Section A or Section B, doesn't matter. It's got it. That section's coming in at
existing ridge height.
Existing ridge height.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Which isn't, I don't think, is what is happening.
No, it's identified in there as 4 on that, but it shows it steps up.
Yeah, no, it steps up because it steps up on the elevation. Why isn't it? Why isn't it stepping up on the elevation?
Yes.
Then? Oh, sorry, on the section.
Yeah.
Steps up on the elevation.
Well, in the report, proposed section A, it actually shows it stepping up there.
The proposed roof plan also shows it stepping up.
Yeah. Anyhow,
so there's some inconsistency with drawings
that
the architect needs to.
That might need to be. And I would also say that we've had to go back and do this comparison ourselves, and in lodging a modification, I know you guys probably do this all the time, I would have expected to see a lot of red bubbles, at least on the elevations, and I'm not seeing that, so it has been a bit of an exercise, and I dare say it's the same exercise for council, to go backwards and forwards to figure out where the degree of change is. And that's the critical assessment, first to understand the degree of change and then figure out whether there is an impact from that degree of change. It's been a little bit difficult for us, and I think we've probably said to council officers that, you know, I would have asked for some more specificity on the plans. So there's, as I said, from here there's a few kind of inconsistencies that we can't have when we've already had a little bit of history of changes happening. Okay. Any other questions?
No.
All right, that's clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, panel.
With that, I'm going to adjourn the meeting close the meeting to the public and adjourn for us to make our deliberations on these matters, and they will turn up on Council's website probably in about 3 or 4 days. Okay, thank you.